Yeah! And welcome. If you're hearing that music, you know that one, it's the fifth Friday, and two, this is Spiritual Perspectives, taking a look at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. And with every edition of Spiritual Perspectives, we invite you to join into the conversation if there's a question or an aspect that you'd like to bring up for our guest that you just think I'm missing, make sure you join right in. The phone number in the studio is area code 415-543-8255. 415, which spells San Francisco, and area codes 543, which spells kid, because we're childlike, not ish, and 8255, which spells talk. And that is Spiritual Perspectives. It's your opportunity to join in as we discuss that deeper spiritual perspective of real life. This morning, we have a lovely guest with us, actually from the other coast right at the moment. So we're sort of coast-to-coast radio this morning. Our guest this morning is Christine Dreesen, and she's a professional practitioner, a lecturer, and a teacher of the scientific system called Christian Science. This is an individual who's living a public professional practice in spiritual healing and has been doing so in addition to an amazing background, including a career as a harpist and a dancer. So this morning, welcome live from New York, as they like to say, the town so nice they named it twice. Everybody, this is Christine. Christine, this is everybody.
Hi, Scout, and hi, everybody. Thanks so much for this opportunity.
This is a delight to have you with us. You've got such an amazing background. I mean, during the fall of Saigon, during the American part of the Vietnam War, you actually served as director of the Indo-Chinese Refugee Legal Assistance Program. Now, that's a mouthful for ATW. So you've been a part of our government. You've been an attorney as a member of the American Bar Association. And you practice now as a full-time public practice of spiritual healing. Try and put that all together in a couple of sentences.
Well, it's interesting. I was drawn into the law, into the practice of law, because I wanted to help people. I specialized in criminal and juvenile and domestic law and developed programs for women prisoners and their children to rehabilitate them and get them back on their feet. But it was so interesting working with people. They kept wanting more. There's only so much I could do for them humanly. And I found when I would share spiritual ideas with them, they found those so much more comforting, the spiritual guidance. And I finally decided I needed to be out there helping people with what I had found in my life was the most powerful solution to problems. And I tell people I'm still arguing cases, only in a higher court, the court of spirit, and I'm still arguing on behalf of the rights of every human being to be free from suffering, to enjoy life and health and strength and dominion and success, because that's what God gave us, and I love it.
Now, it's interesting to see that at one point you joined the legal and legislative division at the First Church of Christ Scientist to advance issues related to spiritual healing. In that position, you even lobbied in D.C. on Medicare bills and child abuse protection and treatment acts and so forth. But let's just speak of that for a moment, not to put anybody as good guy or bad guy. Why do we need to lobby Washington, D.C., about spiritual healing?
I think we're in a period right now where the medical is very much in control of the kinds of treatments people use. And this is not in any way to disparage doctors. Mary Baker Eddy, who discovered Christian Science and gave it to the world, had great respect for doctors. They're giving their lives 24/7 to relieve suffering. But she had found a better method. She found, and we can talk about this later, a medicine that was more effective in the Bible. But today, there's so much of an emphasis on medical technology having all the answers. I know when I was at law school, one of my professors, an antitrust professor, commented on the fact that normally our government restricts monopoly. But when it came to medical care, he said there seems to be a limit on what people can use. They can only use medical technology. That's beginning to break away, where the government is acknowledging that there are other forms of treatment that people from many different religions find very helpful, and that the public is best served when each person can find the treatment that works best for them, rather than forcing people to choose simply medical, that is, allopathic medicine and treatments, which are very, very, very expensive today and most of the world doesn't even have access to.
Yeah, very true. In fact, it's interesting, there one of the other broadcasters here on the station, Dr. Len Saputo, you'd enjoy him a lot. He had a program on a little earlier, and they were discussing the fact that in California, you can't treat cancer except by one of three specific methods, so they end up having to treat the immune system and the patient, but not the cancer, and that way they stay out of jail.
Oh, my gosh. And sometimes I think there's that fear. Sometimes our fear of being penalized becomes greater than our desire to help people. And I think we need that courage, every single individual, to put the welfare of our fellow beings first. Even if it means we're going to be criticized or penalized, if we're loving our fellow man enough to look for the best for each person and allow each person to find the best, everyone's going to be benefited by that. But I don't think anyone's benefited by restricting the different means people find healing through.
You know, you mentioned courage, and I think that that's a really nice lead-in, because you also mentioned Mary Baker Eddy. And she brought out a book that she labeled it as science, and actually Christian Science is using that word as well. She brought that book out at a time when women didn't publish books, women didn't publish newspapers, and science really meant something there other than just a word that got thrown around on TV commercials. So why did she go and call this science?
What a good question. A lot of people are challenging that today. For a couple of reasons. The science, in its truest sense, is a truth based on universal laws that anybody can study and put into practice. And it's interesting, a lot of people today say, oh, science and religion, science and God, spirituality, those two don't go together, they're opposites. Actually, they have always been together. It's just that when we kind of moved into this more materialistic period, or a secular period of that I call the secular period of the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, people began saying, no, there's nothing but matter. But if you think there's nothing but matter, the only result you can come to, and I do a lot of medical talks, a lot of talks at medical schools, so I've heard this from some medical practitioners who say everything is nothing but matter. If you begin from that premise, matter is self-destructive, and it cannot heal itself throughout history. You know, the jokes in the among the medical throughout the quote, book of quotations is that the cure is worse than the disease. And so you have, today I've heard medical doctors saying, the only true science is skepticism. You can't prove anything. Well, that just isn't true. Science of mathematics, anybody can study it. Doesn't matter if you're Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, atheist, you can study it. Science of aerodynamics, you can study it, put it into practice. For example, you could take a Muslim child, a Jewish child, an atheist child. They could take a piece of paper, fold it, make an airplane, fly it using the laws of aerodynamics without ever having heard of it, without understanding it. Now, if someone dug deeper and got to know the laws of aerodynamics, they could build something that would take them to Mars or the moon as they're doing today. Same thing with the science of God. Now, as you know, the Bible we study here in the United States, if you're English speaking, is in translation, or if you're Spanish speaking or French speaking, because it was written in Aramaic and in Greek. So we're studying a translation, and I love languages, and I've found what we may have one word for, somebody else, like the Eskimos, may have many, many words for snow. So when someone's trying to translate something, they'll choose one of the words according to what they understand. And so in the English translation, some of them, you have the word knowledge, whereas in many of the translations, and going back to the original Greek, you have the word science. So, like example, Romans 11 says, talks about the science of God. Job 37 says his science is perfect. Proverbs says the fear, the respect, the love of God's Spirit is the beginning of science, and this science is found in the, Colossians says, is found in the mystery of Christ. And then 1 Timothy warns against false science, which Paul defines as anything that turns us away from the teachings of God, that God's Spirit is our life. So throughout history, science and God have been one. And for those who believe, as I do, that based on my study of the Bible all my life, that there's only one divine creative intelligence of this universe that is all-powerful, that is the source of our life, this divine power is all-knowing, and science is knowledge, so science must be the knowledge of God. Science must be what God is knowing, what God is doing, God's laws, and can't be separated from it. And I think that's the beginning of us finding solutions to problems, finding that health is natural.
Mm-hmm. Because the origins of science, and it's gotten we have to remember that this quote-unquote Western science has only ruled the world for a couple hundred years.
Yeah.
But the origins of science were literally that which includes careful observation of natural phenomena, the formulation of a hypothesis, and the conducting of one or more experiments to test the hypothesis, and the ability to have a repeatable result.
Yeah.
And that's the piece that people seem to forget. But it's interesting, I watched that science has been looping around and catching up with us. I've had the opportunity to interview, isn't that wonderful? His name just went out of my head. One of the primary doctors in the movie The Secret.
Yes, right.
And that's so funny, it's gone. Yeah. And so he and I discussed, the first question I asked him was, because I'd read as much as I could understand his books, in the quantum physics world, it sort of comes down to there is no stuff in stuff. And he sat back and thought about that, and he said, well, string theory, and he said, yeah, actually, you're right. There is no stuff in stuff. There's only stuffness to stuff. Because in quantum physics, they've discovered two things. One, that everything is energy. And two, thought affects thing. So
yeah.
Science is discovering what
yeah.
Mary Baker Eddy tested and found as repeatable results.
Yeah.
How many years ago?
Yeah, 140. Back in 1866 is when she first began understanding there was a divine law that governed a science of the Christ.
And so you yourself, Christine, have you got example of where prayer has created a healing result in your own life?
Yes, and it's interesting how you phrase that, because I hear that often. Is there an example? And it's because often when people talk about prayer healing, they think of miracle. Okay, this person had this disease and suddenly, you know, it was healed. In Christian Science, we're not talking about miracle. This is a way of life. I'm third generation in my 60s. My daughter's fourth generation. I've never had any medicine, any drugs, vitamins, inoculations, surgery. I've never been, you know, to a doctor or a hospital. When I had my daughter at home, I had her at home natural childbirth with some doctors in Chicago who specialized only in that. So I have relied daily, hourly, moment by moment, for every need on prayer to God. And it's why Mrs. Eddy had been a devout Christian, a member of the Congregational Church, loved her church, loved the Bible, mm-hmm. teachings of Christ Jesus, but she couldn't understand why good people would pray and not be healed. And she finally realized when she had, there were two parts to her discovery, and the second part was when she realized it's not God's will that we suffer, that health is natural to man, and that it can't be blind faith. It can't be maybe it'll work this time, maybe it won't. It has to be an understanding, because it's a science, understanding that God's law alone governs, and governs all the time. And when she realized that, not only was she healed, but then she was able to heal other people and found that this science of the Christ is not only therapeutic, it heals problems, but it is preventative. Because when we keep our thoughts in line with God's law, you don't even get sick. You know, people sometimes say to me, well, but what do you do when you get a headache? And I'm going, let's see, when was the last time I ever had a headache? When my dad first came into an actual practice of Christian Science, he had been through what would be called a very neglectful, if not abusive, childhood, didn't know his father, kept being abandoned by his mother, and thought he was a failure and kept losing his jobs. He didn't think he had finished school. It was just a very challenging growing up period. So he was a young man who had suffered from severe migraine headaches for years. And it was so severe that even when he got a job and was working hard, the pain would be overwhelming and he'd get very angry and then lose his temper and either lose his job or run away from it. And when he married my mom and began learning about who this God is, it's not some old man in the sky who's helpless or sends suffering. No, this is divine love itself.
Or just sort of has a bad attitude of, you're not my best friend anymore.
Exactly. A human sense of God that we project on God rather than, as Genesis 1 says, and he began to discover, it says we all, whether we're Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, atheist, doesn't matter, every single one of us was made in the divine image and likeness, male and female, young and old. And God doesn't get sick. God isn't angry. God is love itself. And God made each of us in that divine image and likeness. And he began studying the definition Mary Baker Eddy has in her textbook, Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures. She has a definition on page 475 that's fantastic and very detailed, where it says, okay, if God, divine love, is the only intelligence, then it's the only mind any of us has. And that mind is all-knowing, knows only good. So each of us expresses divine intelligence every moment. We can't lose it. We can't have a mind that can be deranged or limited by heredity or education. We have access to that divine intelligence every moment, and we only express the qualities God does. It's God that enables us, Genesis 1 says, God causes us to succeed and prosper. And when he began praying along those lines, not only was he able to get a job that was way beyond what his education would have warranted, but he did very well in it. The migraine headaches were healed completely, never again had them. And he had never been able to finish college, but he got a job that they had been looking for an attorney. It was the American Bar Association, but because of his other experience, they hired him. And as he prayed every step of the way to express more of that divine intelligence, he did such a phenomenal job for them that when he retired, they gave him a gavel award for his contribution to law. That's the kind of love God has for each one of us.
You know, I'd like to reinforce that, Christine, because you brought up one of my favorite points, which is that healing should not be reserved for disease.
Yes.
And you just mentioned that the migraines were a physical aspect.
Yes.
But let's talk a little bit about his approach to his work changed, the opportunities for work changed.
Yes.
I want to actually back up a whole bit and have you repeat it. You started with, we're all formed in the image of God. Just do that piece again, because I know people can't rewind radio, and I really want them to hear what you said.
I'm so glad you're repeating this. The very beginning of the Bible, Genesis 1, is an entire account of creation, a complete one. And it says God, Spirit, is the only creator and created everything. And everything God created was good, 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 very good, and his work was finished. And in Ecclesiastes 3:14, it says, whatsoever God does, It shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. So you've got not only God creating everything, animals, trees, mountains, everything good and perfect, Deuteronomy 32, God's work is perfect, but then he creates man, and right from the beginning of the Bible, somehow for centuries people had skipped over it and started with the allegory of Adam and Eve, which is very important, but is not the truth of God's creation. And so they thought women were written out of the picture, but right in the beginning, it says man, male and female, made in the divine image and likeness, equal, expressing God fully. And then it says God causes man to multiply, to prosper, to replenish the earth, not destroy it. And so if nothing can be added to it, you can't add greed and dishonesty and incompetency, nor can you add disease to it, nor can you take anything from it that God has put into it. Integrity, unselfishness, compassion, proper functioning of the body, the organs, proper growth of the cells. God maintains his creation in absolute harmony. Proof of that is from the beginning of the Bible to the end. Everyone that trusted God's law, Moses, Elijah, Elisha, Abraham, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Daniel, Peter, Paul, John, all the way through, there are tons of stories. Anyone who trusted that law was able to prove that good was the reality. Supply comes from God. It's never limited. Strength, even if you're older, you know, the problems with women fearing that they're infertile, that they can't have babies and they have to try all these different methods. Many women in the Bible, even when they were in their 80s, 90s, God provided the baby. You know, whatever the need was, they trusted it came from God. Because in Genesis 1, it said God causes us to be healthy, to be prosperous, and his work was done. It's a complete account of creation. It's for every single one of us out there.
Just taking that in. There was that moment to gobble it up. So
yeah.
So I love the concept of, I'm borrowing the quote, and I'm not going to be able to reference from whom I'm borrowing, but just, if you find yourself having distanced from God, who moved?
Very, very good question. Two things. Okay. In reality, nobody moved. Because God is all in all and fills all space. It's the only God, divine love is the only life, the only reality, the only mind, the only substance, the only creator. And Jesus said, and in fact, it's something that raises a question with a lot of people. He said, my Father and I are one. And so sometimes people think that means the infinite was reduced down to a fleshly body, and that's not what he was saying, because he goes on to say, Father, that all these that follow me may be one in me as I am one in you. It's kind of like the sun and the rays of light. Each ray of light is a manifestation of the sun, so each one has all the qualities of the sun, the warmth, the brightness, the light. The individual rays aren't suns themselves, but they are the manifestation of the sun. And a ray can't break off and run off by itself and become cold and dark and do its own thing, because it is the sun manifested. And, of course, any analogy for God is going to be very limited, but God is the infinite, infinite love. Mary Baker Eddy has 7 different synonyms she found for God that'll help answer this. Principle, cause, law, foundation, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. And we are the manifestation of that mind, that divine intelligence, of that life. We manifest it in freedom and flexibility and energy. We're principle manifested in right thinking, right acting, and on down the line. And so we, a manifestation, an idea of something can't be separated from it. There's no place we can go. And that's a very comforting thought. Like Psalms 139 says, where could you possibly go that you would be separated from God's love if God fills all space? If you ascend up into heaven, God is there. If you make your bed in hell, God is there. If you take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there, the hand of divine love is there to comfort you, guide you. If you say, oh, but the night is going to cover me, even the darkness shall be light about you. This light of divine love, divine truth, fills infinity. So, in reality, we can never be separated from it. But sure seems like we are. Sure seems like we make a lot of mistakes, and sure seems like there's a lot of suffering in the world. And the reason for that, Mrs. Eddy says in her book, once again, Science and Health, on page 411, she says, there are three things that seem to mesmerize, like a hypnotist, mesmerize thought and make us think that evil is real, suffering is inevitable, and those three things are fear, ignorance, not knowing who God is, and sin. And so fear is perhaps the greatest. The medical research talks about two different phenomena. Placebo effect, and I've heard you mention that before, and nocebo effect. Placebo effect, most people know, is when you think you've been given a treatment, a drug, something, and you get better, whereas you haven't been given anything.
And I love the fact that they play that down as if that was less important than the drug.
I know.
Amazing? We convinced you that this would help, and you got better. That's not important. We gave you a drug that would help, and you got better. That's what's important. I'd like to see a lot more study in placebo effect, but go ahead.
Well, and I am glad you mentioned that, because there are many books out that document it. In fact, one book called, I will think of this in one moment, The Irreducible Mind by a number of psychotherapists, psychiatrists, Crabtree and Kelly, a number of them. And the premise, generally speaking, that they posit at the very beginning is they're talking to their fellow doctors and saying, I think we're ignoring our own research. We have research that shows that intelligence is not in a brain, life is not in a body. And then they have a huge book, many chapters of research and cases that prove that. And there's a lot of study both of placebo and nocebo effect. Many, many studies where one of them where people had a condition of heart disease, and they told them they had a new surgery that would help with that. And so half the group got the surgery. The other half simply got a slit. They were told they were having surgery, and then it was sewed up. So they thought they had had surgery. And the group that had the surgery, it's hard to describe, but each one had individual responses. One got a little bit better and then got worse, and some kept getting worse. But then the group that supposedly had been diagnosed with heart disease was told, no, you've had surgery. So they thought they had had treatment, but no intrusion in the body. Across the board said, okay, I'm fine now. Some of them went back to work. Some of them said, this is great. I've never felt this way. Different responses. You know, if disease were real, that wouldn't happen. Now, nocebo effect is where people think they've been exposed to disease or something noxious in the air. They develop the symptoms. They may even suffer from it, die. But they were never exposed. It's all fear or the expectation that you're going to have to suffer. Many examples of that. Ironically, Mary Baker Eddy had documented both types of cases long before they gave terms to those in her book, Science and Health. What she realized, and it was the first part of her discovery, because for like 20 years, like many people today, she had been ill with all sorts of things, digestive, back problems, emotional problems. Allopathic medicine had totally failed her. So she was trying everything else out there, homeopathy, hydropathy, diets. Other things were popular, quimbyism, spiritualism. And homeopathy brought her some relief. She was so grateful, but it wasn't lasting, and it was back into the pain. And she was searching for 20 years for a mental cause to all suffering, and found it when a woman who had been given up by the doctors, She was suffering from what was called then dropsy. There's another word for it today, but it's where the body seems to bloat up until the person passes on, I guess. And the doctors gave up on the case. Well, the woman asked Mary Baker Eddy to pray for her, but said, but I have to still keep taking the drugs because I'm afraid I'll die. And Mrs. Eddy knew the drugs weren't good for her because literally throughout history, matter-based drugs have always had negative side effects. But so Mrs. Eddy gave her what would be considered today a placebo. It was an attenuated homeopathic pellet, so there was nothing in it. And she kept praying for her, and the woman was completely healed. And that, she said, was the first falling apple of her discovery. Because what usually happens is people begin from the premise, okay, I've got a disease, I've got a lack in my life, you know, I don't have any money, I have, you know, broken relationship, whatever the problem is, they say, okay, this is what's true about me, and then they pray God to come down and change it, and that doesn't seem to work. But then she discovered, okay, wait a second, maybe all the problems that come to us, whether it's physical problems or emotional or relationship or finance or whatever, maybe it's because of negative thoughts, fear, ignorance, thinking, well, maybe God is sending this because I've been sinning and it's my punishment. I've been reading the Bible all my life, beginning to end. There's an overwhelming message from beginning to the end of the Bible that God is love itself, a tender, forgiving, redeeming love that no matter how many times we mess up, and all you have to do is look at Abraham and David and everybody else. We revere those people if you study the Bible, and yet each one of them did some really bad things. Like David, you know, first he had stopped Goliath from, you know, taking over, killing his soldiers and taking over his people. He was a young boy. He stopped Goliath, he did wonderful things, but then when he became king, you know, the pride, the control, the I can do it now, whatever I want to type thought came in that comes to each of us sometimes. And so he takes somebody else's wife, has an affair, gets her pregnant, so he has her husband killed. Not good, not good. And then he loses his child and he turns to God and says, oh my gosh, have I messed up? God forgives him.
Yes.
God forgives him, redeems him so that he can keep learning more about God. And, of course, that was Jesus' message all through his Sermon on the Mount,
it's an interesting place. If you think of a judgmental God, if you look at it, I mean, even Jesus threw tantrums and actually lost faith for a moment. That's in the book.
Well, the interesting thing is, he was, there's a lot to that, and so I'm trying to think how far back to go on this. let me just explain one thing. Let me explain the relationship of God, Christ, and Jesus, and then talk about Jesus. Could I do that for one second?
That sounds like fun.
Okay. If you think of God not as a loving person, but love is the God of this universe, not sensual, selfish, human love that changes, but unchangeable, divine, pure, unconditional, omnipotent love, father, mother love in the most tender sense, is the power of this universe. It is the source of our life. How would that love be manifested? Well, if you think of a mother's love, for example, a mother's love would not be love if it weren't manifested in palpable ways in the human experience. For example, the mother may say, stop, don't do that. That's like the angel messages coming from divine love, and they speak to every single one of us. It's what the Bible calls the still, small voice. Even people who don't believe in God, you hear people all the time going, gee, something told me I shouldn't have turned down that street. Something told me I should have made that call. That something told me is the Christ. It is the angel message from divine love guiding us every single moment. It's just that we don't usually listen to it. We usually listen to what Paul calls the carnal mind, self-will, self-justification, self-pity, resentment, whatever, the carnal world thinking. But that divine love sometimes speaks through angel messages to us. Sometimes the mother actually is teaching the child, correcting the child, saying, here's how you do this. Now you mustn't do this because this will happen. That's the Christ manifested as the Holy Ghost, teaching, purifying, deepening our understanding of what is right and what enables us to succeed. But sometimes the child says to the mother, I don't understand what you're doing when you tie the shoe. Show me. Don't tell me. Show me. You demonstrate it. And so that Christ message from God, divine love, since God is a father-mother love, the Bible tells us, Bible talks about God as both father and mother, since God is a father-mother love, that can't be a father-mother love if there's not a child. And that's why Jesus said, we're the children of God. God is our father. Well, that message of our sonship to God, our divine inheritance, the Christ was manifested as son of God to demonstrate for all of us, what does it mean to be the child of God? What have we inherited? Health, dominion, strength, freedom, the ability to overcome sin, disease, and death. Because as you'll remember, Jesus healed every kind of physical problem there is, acute and chronic, congenital, hereditary, contagious, long-standing problems, 12 years, 18 years, 38 years, people who had died, even Lazarus, who was in the tomb for 4 days. He overcame all those things to show us God gives us the ability, because he said anyone who follows his teaching would be able to do the same works he did and greater works than these, because he was going to be ascending, because his final demonstration was the crucifixion, which was the other thing you were making reference to. So this manifestation of God's love came in the form of, what does it mean to be a son? Jesus demonstrated that. Mary Baker Eddy said, because he came, that idea of sonship came in the form of a person in the flesh, he had to face all the temptations too. My thought on it is the time he got very angry with the self-righteousness and the impurity of the practice of religion that he saw at the temple, so he reacted and started whipping the money changers out of the temple, came at the beginning, but by the end, he had progressed so far, the foundation of his teaching and the foundation of the entire Bible and the foundation of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam is the two great commandments, love God, Spirit with all your heart and soul and strength and mind, submit to the will of God, and second, love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as God loves them. Well, his final demonstration that he knew he was going to make, told everybody, okay, the last thing I'm going to do is I'm going to be arrested, falsely accused, tortured, nailed to a cross, and it's going to appear that I die so that I can be resurrected and show you that it's real easy for somebody to tell you, oh, no, you can do this, you can do it, but you're wondering, yeah, if you were in my position suffering like I am, you wouldn't be saying that. So he had to go through that himself, and my reading of it is what he went through is worse than anything any of us has ever been through, not only having his own disciples who he loved so dearly. He never did anything mean to anybody. He healed people. He saved them. He forgave sins. And yet his own disciples, one of them betrayed him. The one who loved him, said he loved him the most, denied him 3 times. They abandoned him. Then the others lied about him, and then he was tortured. But on the cross, 2 things happened. In the Garden of Gethsemane, he demonstrated the first great commandment. This is what it means to be the child of God. Not my will, but thine be done. Trust, yes, that God is in complete control. And for me, that part of it is very, 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 very important, because sometimes we love God, we pray to him, we trust him, but then we say, oh, wait, this situation is much too, whether it's a physical problem that they've diagnosed as incurable or whether it's a problem at the office, with your work, with a relationship. No, you know, I'm going to lose this. You know, they've got more power. They're going to take it away. I've got to stop them. But Jesus was demonstrating,
yes,
no.
Yes, God, excuse me, God, I'd like to turn this over to you, but I'd like you to do it this way, please.
Yes, yes. How often have I done that? Oh, my goodness. That's such a temptation to say, let me help you out, God. You know, I know you're wise, but I think I know better what's going to happen in this situation.
From over here in the armchair, I can see how to do this
right.
So much better.
That's right, that's right. And yet Jesus had to demonstrate, I can let go totally, let them try to destroy me and everything I've done, so I'm all alone. But I know God's in complete control. It says in Isaiah 33:22, God's the judge, God's the lawgiver, God's the king. He will save us. Those are the three branches of government, judicial, executive, legislative, includes corrections and military. There isn't anything that is not under the control of God. Jeremiah says there's nothing too hard for God. So Jesus first had to demonstrate, what does it mean to have absolute confidence that God is in control, do his will? And then on the cross, he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. When Pilate was saying to him, you know, tell me what, you know, give me something to work with. I don't think you're guilty here. Let me get you off. And he said, no, God's in control here. I don't have to say anything here. I need to go through this. And then the only words, he didn't try to defend himself, but instead he says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And for me, that had two meanings. One, we do some awful things sometimes when we're not listening to God. We seem to say and do some things that are so unlike our true nature. And then afterwards going, oh, please, God, please forgive me. How could I have done that? We need to be ready to do that for our fellow man. Because if we do, that love redeems us and them. Can I give you a healing in my example, in my life, that
fabulous.
Explains that?
Perfect.
And I'll say first, the most amazing example was after Jesus' resurrection, when there was a terrorist hunting down Christians and trying to kill them, throw them in prison, and his name was Saul. And instead of wiping them off the map, the Christ spoke to him and redeemed him, and he became Paul, the strongest proponent of Christianity. That's the kind of love Christ Jesus was saying heals. And I learned that lesson back when I was in college. In the 60s, I was studying in France. I don't know if you remember what was happening in 68, but all around the world. Do you remember some of the things? Are you too young to know back to 68?
I'm young enough to actually be able to remember 68.
That's great. Well, lots of things happening around the world. And in France, in Paris, rioting broke out. The students built barricades. They were fighting every day and fighting with the riot squads. Everything went on strike for a month, but our school, which was American-based, kept going. One day, I was walking home from school. My friend and I passed by. There was a barricade, tear gas everywhere. They'd been fighting, and being an innocent, naive American, I'm going, oh, my gosh, this is exciting. What's happening? Well, we walk up there. The CRS, the riot squad, thought, students, foreigners, we must have been involved. That's all the evidence they needed. We were arrested. We were taken to a prison on the outside of town, and guys and girls separated. They took me in to interrogate me, and they were asking me questions that were like, you know, were you throwing these rocks and everything? And I'm looking at them like, what? Why would anybody throw rocks at anybody? I couldn't even understand what they were talking about. And that did not please them. They took me to my cell, and that's when I realized how serious it was, because in my cell, there were people bleeding and crying. I could hear screaming all over the prison. Guards would come, take people away. They'd come back in bad condition. And as a child, I had had many healings. I had always felt the love of God, no fear. And suddenly, I was paralyzed with fear. Thousands of miles from my parents, thousands of miles from the laws that protected me, violence everywhere, it seemed, you know, senseless. But I realized I had a choice to make. Either I could buy into the picture that the physical senses were telling me of, you know, many minds and some of them hateful and some of them dishonest, whatever, and become a part of that dream, like in the Adam dream in Genesis 2 and 3, or I could choose to lift my thought up to what the Christ message was saying, that I had heard as a child, God speaking to me, saying, no, divine love alone governs. These are God's children. And that's what I chose to do, and I just opened my heart to God. And immediately, I had been trying to pray with a hymn from a poem written by Mary Baker Eddy, Shepherd, Show Me How to Go. And I couldn't even say the words, Shepherd, show me, Shepherd, show me, Shepherd, show me. They meant nothing. But once I opened my heart to God and said, no, God, you, divine lover in complete control, immediately I remembered how my dad used to sing that hymn when I was a child, and immediately I would remember, no, my Father, Mother, God's right here with me, and the fear would go away. And I realized right there in the prison, my Father, Mother, God was with me, and protecting everybody else there. And since this divine love, you know, if there's only one divine creative intelligence of the universe, there can be only one mind, and this mind is love itself. So it was naturally communicating to everybody there goodness, compassion, mercy, forgiveness, patience, tenderness. And so I just prayed from that basis that this prison was filled with God's precious children, all governed by him. I was thinking of that Isaiah 33 that I mentioned, God's the judge, the lawgiver, and the king. Well, I prayed for a while that way, feeling absolute peace. Suddenly I realized everyone in the cell had become calm and quiet, no more crying, no more screaming around the prison. The guards had stopped coming. And so I just kept praying right on into the middle of the night. Absolute peace. In the middle of the night, the guards came back, this time for me. But I was not afraid at all. I knew who was in control. They took me, released me, gave me my things. I sat on the street, middle of the night, kept praying. My friend was released a few more minutes after that. And untouched, I had not been touched at all, but the reaching out to the Christ had brought a sense of peace. Well, that became the foundation for how I always approached problems. I travel all over the world to Africa every year and everything. But a few months after that, I went on a trip to, it was communist Russia back then, ended up in, and I had lots of things I could tell about through that as I prayed. But then I don't know if I should say this on the radio, but back then you could do it. I hitchhiked from Helsinki back to France, going through Scandinavia, Germany. And that was a common way of traveling back then. I wouldn't recommend it today.
Yeah, but yeah, don't try this at home.
Don't try this at home. But every step of the way, I was praying. I met wonderful people. But the last ride, I had been going for about a week. I had to get over the border from Germany into France, got out of one car. It was almost nighttime. It was, you know, getting dark. And a car sped up just as I got out of one, opened the door, and without even thinking or praying or anything, I got in, and the guy slammed the door and took off. But he did not go up the highway into France. Instead, he turned and went up a little mountain road where people told me later I could have disappeared, never been seen again, nothing up there. He was drunk. He was wild. He was driving very fast. He began grabbing me with one hand, trying to pull me over as he was driving, telling me he was going to rape me. But because of what I had seen in the prison this time, I was not afraid. And I just became still for a moment. You know, my favorite passage, Psalms 46, 1 and 10. God is a very present help in trouble. Therefore will we not fear. Be still and know that I am God. Silence the fear and the self-will and everything. And so I became very still. And I turned to him as he was putting his hands on me, trying to pull me over. And I said, you know what? God is love itself. And this love fills all space. So it's right here in the car with me, and it's protecting me, and it's protecting you from doing something wrong. And this love is not sensual and violent or drunk. This is a pure, unconditional, tender love that redeems each one of us. Well, I'm sitting here telling him these things, and suddenly I realized he had taken his hands off me, had both hands on the wheel, had slowed down, and it was like he wasn't even drunk. He was just kind of listening. So I stopped talking. I was so surprised. And he said, "No, please keep talking. I need this." So I shared with him what we were talking about, Genesis 1. I said, "You know what? God made you in the divine image and likeness. And it says in the Bible, God gave you dominion over sin. God gave you dominion over alcohol and anger, sensuality. God made you to be good and pure." Well, we had not seen anything along the road. Suddenly we came upon what is called an auberge, a house where you could get food, drinks, things like that. And he turned in and he said, "I'm not good for you to be with. Tell me where you're going." He went in, called the family in the next country that was about an hour and a half away, told them where I was, asked them to come get me, asked the innkeeper to watch me to make sure I'd be safe till they got there, and then he thanked me for what I had shared. To me, that's the Christ. That's God's love in action in our lives, redeeming each of us, healing us, strengthening us, healing violence, hatred. It's very powerful.
Christine, you are sharing so much, so fast. I want to let people know, I'm going to put this interview up on my website because this is something that y'all are going to want to listen to more than once. I've got that already, just to catch all of the bits that are in there. My website is lifeinsights.net. Click on radio, give me till tomorrow, and I'll have it up on the website so that you can re-listen to the interview or you can even download it to play it again. And I also want to thank the First Church of Christ Science Mill Valley for having sponsored Christine and our program this morning. They've brought us to. So, Christine, in 3 minutes, what do you mean when you say the word prayer?
Okay, good question. A lot of things you could say about prayer, but let me just share two that come all the way through the Bible. First, for me, prayer is acknowledging God's allness. That's why they use the word praise, rejoice. In fact, I would say every day, if you start your day from the moment you're waking up, just saying, "Thank you, Father. Thank you, Father, Mother God. Thank you, Divine Love. This is your day. You are all in all. You're the only mind, the only life. You are my life. You are my mind." That rejoicing in God's allness, God's love for everyone, is prayer in itself. And you'll find it from beginning to end of the Bible. Rejoice, praise God. Very powerful prayer. Then the second part, which has taken me many, many years to learn, I'm still working on it, is, as you can tell, being still and listening rather than talking. Because there's a great tendency to want to talk at God or to tell or whoever to try to get to God through somebody, find whatever, a priest, a rabbi, a minister, a Christian Science practitioner, a doctor, somebody you can tell all your problems to and then hope they can make them go away. I'm finding the most effective prayer is when we can become silent and listen, because God is speaking to us, and the carnal mind that, you know, the world talks about, that Paul talks about, is that worldly thinking that says, "But what about this? What about that?" If we can silence that, listen for the still small voice that's saying, "No, you are my precious child right now. You don't ever have to give up. There's no problem too hard for God." I'm finding that if I listen, I am hearing that still small voice every moment, guiding me, strengthening me, and no matter how serious the problem is, we've had many serious problems that have come up. My mother was a practitioner, my father, my aunt and uncle, many practitioners in our family, and we have healed so many problems. But even, and just in a couple words, because I know it's the end, there was a point in my mom's life when she was in her 70s, and it looked like she would pass on, and she refused to give up. Instead, as Mrs. Eddy says, she strengthened her trust in God and purified her love. And even though physically it looked like there was no way she could come back, she kept sticking in there, praying to purify her love for God and man. And pretty soon the change came. She was completely restored to health and strength and weight and everything else, and went back to work full-time in her late 70s, lectured like I'm a lecturer. She lectured on 5 continents in 4 months. She was in the full-time practice into her 90s with a very heavy caseload, traveling, writing articles, because God has that kind of plan for each one of us. We don't have to ever give up.
This is so much fun. I keep doing all of the radio breaking the rules. There's that moment of dead air because I'm so busy soaking in what you said.
And that's so good. And that's a good example of what we need to do in prayer. Mrs. Eddy says, desirous prayer, and no loss can occur from trusting God with your desires, that they may be molded and exalted before they take form in words and deeds. And so even just the desire to be good, to do better, to love more, that desire is prayer itself.
Oh, fabulous. Christine, this has been absolutely a delight. I wish we had 3 hours instead of just one. And I do hope that we'll get a chance to talk again, because this has been an absolute treat. Everyone, you've been listening to Christine. All right, I'm saying Dreesen. Is it Dreesen?
Yes,
or Dreesen? It
that's
is Dreesen.
Perfect.
Thank you. You're listening to Christine Dreesen, who is a full-time practitioner of understanding spirit and healing, recognizing healing with scientific certainty through the Christ. Christine, thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate it. And again, I want to let everybody know, I'll have this posted up on the website, which is lifeinsights.net, or the shortcut to that is just go to notscott.com. Notscott.com will take you right in there. You can click on radio, and by tomorrow I'll have it up on the website. You can replay it, you can download it, and share it with your friends. All brought to us, thank you so much, by the First Church of Christian Science, Mill Valley, and by a number of people around. We appreciate it. Christine, thank you so much. And for everybody, this has been Spiritual Perspectives, and this is Scout Bartley reminding you that no matter where you are on the planet, it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose. Treat yourself as a loved one, because you truly are.